Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm thrilled to be with all of you today. I have a great show planned for you. Michel Basquel will be joining us. He is the author of a wonderful new book called Meditation for Daily Stress, and I'll be telling you more about him in just a little bit. But I think we all could use a little meditation in our lives with all the daily stress we're seeing in the news. So I'm really excited to have him on. But first, I want to share with you some things going on in and around the city. Of course, my weekly recipe with you and some things going on in the news. So lots of things are going on in the New York area. Tonight there's a screening of a wonderful film called Seed. It's a documentary, Seed, The Untold Story, and it is going to be showing out at the Plaza Cinema and Media Arts Center in Patchogue, and that's tonight at 7:30. I have tickets. I will be going. It's supposed to be a great film, and I'm really excited to see that. Also, yesterday, tickets went on sale for Stone Barns' Sheep Shearing Festival, and that's always a big event, and it sells out, so that's why I'm sharing with you that the tickets went on sale yesterday. So if you're interested in going to a sheep shearing festival, it's a really fun day for the whole family. That is on April 29th, but the tickets are on sale now, so you can go to the Stone Barns website to get info. Also, I should say that all of these events are also posted on my website with the links to getting the tickets. So you can also go to my website at iegreen.com for that. Tonight and tomorrow, NOFA New York, which is the Northeast Organic Farming Association, they're having brainstorming sessions down here in Brooklyn and Manhattan. Tonight is Brooklyn. Tomorrow is in Manhattan. They're really just trying to get feedback from urban farmers. They had one last month out here on Long Island for Long Island farmers to get an idea of what they can do to help you out. And NOFA New York is a great organization. And if you're trying to grow vegetables organically, they're definitely someone you want on your in your corner. So think about coming out to the brainstorming sessions. They're free. There will be some refreshments, and it should be a good time. Tomorrow, March 10th, is Standing Rock and the Native Nations March in Washington, D.C. There should be some sister marches going on around the country as well. I'm not up on those, but definitely worth checking out. But if you want to march in solidarity with the First Nations of America, you can join them in Washington tomorrow. This march starts at 10 a.m. at the Army Corps of Engineers and will finish at noon at the White House. Also, this weekend, North Shore, Slow Food North Shore, along with the Cinema Arts Center, are sponsoring our fourth annual Food and Film Feast. This is an incredible event. Every year it sells out. We show, this year actually, we have 9 short documentaries, and they're short. Many of them are like 4 minutes long to 7 minutes long, short documentaries on different issues involving food. And then we pair it with a speaker that can address the topic along with a food that is highlighted in the film. And so it's a full, you know, 6-course meal. Wine is flowing, and organic wine, I should say, is flowing. And it's a great, great evening. So there's still tickets. If you're interested, go to the Cinema Arts Center's website, and you can buy tickets. There's discount tickets for Slow Food members or Cinema Arts Center members. But it's a great, great event. And one of the discussions that we will be having during the event is the issue revolving around hydroponics versus organics and whether a hydroponic can actually be labeled organic. And so we have a salad that we'll be serving that is hydroponically grown right here in Brooklyn, along with a salad that is organically grown in a tunnel right here on the east end of Long Island. And we will be sampling both salads, doing a taste test, and having a discussion about this. So that should be really a lot of fun. So if you can make it, please come out to that. Also this weekend is the Just Food Conference, which is an annual event that takes place up at the Teachers College at Columbia University. And it's a great day of bringing together grassroots groups, urban farmers, educators, community activists, discussing issues around equitable food systems and our local food and how to tackle racial inequalities, et cetera. So come out to that if you are able. March 13th, New York SunWorks Greenhouse Project is having their benefit up at the Standard Hotel at the High Line. And this is an opportunity to support New York SunWorks, which is a nonprofit organization that helps build innovative science labs throughout New York City urban schools. So that's a wonderful event as well. What else? There's a couple of really good events going on up in the Boston area. There's the 42nd Annual Gardeners Gathering in Boston on March 18th at Northeastern University. There is also a Food Tank Summit up in Boston at Tufts University on April 1st, and also on April 1st, Just Food Forum on Labor Across the Food System at Harvard Law School, also a great event. So a lot going on in the Boston area as well, if you're interested in that. On March 20th, there is a documentary screening of Indian Point, which is, and it's free, and it's at the Rutgers Presbyterian Church in the city on West 73rd Street. And it starts at 6:30, and it is a documentary about Indian Point, which is scheduled to close, but, of course, we'll see what happens. So that should be an interesting screening if you're interested in going to that. And there's lots more events listed on my website, so do check that out. But I also want to tell you some things that are going on, ways that you can get involved. Yesterday, of course, was International Women's Day, which was great. I wore my red and felt connected to all the other women wearing red and to the businesses that closed in recognition of the of women across the world that are doing really good things for the world. And so that was really great. But one thing that I wrote about in my newsletter this week was the Pawnee Nation out in Oklahoma is suing oil companies for the damage that was caused by a large earthquake that they had there. And reading this article, I was just blown away because it was talking about the increase in earthquakes that are going on out in Oklahoma. You think that, you know, there's no fault line there, what's going on. But it turns out they actually used to have, like, about 2 earthquakes a year. Smaller ones, 2.7, or so. Now they have over 2,500 earthquakes a year. I don't know how that's possible, but it's like 6 or 7 earthquakes a day. How can anyone live with that going on? But anyway, this last earthquake was like 5.8, caused lots of damage to the Pawnee Nation schools and stores and a lot of their land. I mean, I think, the epicenter was only 10 miles off their land, and they're suing them in a tribal court to have them pay for the damages, which only makes sense, and yet the oil companies are still trying to push off the fault as not being theirs. And it just always blows me away how our country protects businesses, when businesses pollute our waters and our rivers and our land and cause damage through earthquakes or just runoff or whatever it might be, oil leaks, they're not responsible for the cleanup. Or occasionally they are if, a lawsuit is successful. But mostly it ends up falling on the taxpayers or the insurance companies, which, of course, ends up causing our rates to go up. But it's just not paid for by the people responsible. And that even goes for our health care. I mean, all the poisonous food that is being produced for us that we ingest with the antibiotics and the hormones and the chemicals that make us sick, who pays for that? Of course we do. So it's something we really all need to look at, and something that I put out there a lot, is that people need to do their research and follow the money. When you follow the money, you really very quickly can find out who's responsible for what. And, you know, it's really, really important to do. On my website, I also have some petitions asking you to sign to clean up our water, to resist a merger between Bayer and Monsanto. So, check those out. I went to a Slow Food New York City event in Brooklyn last week, and the panelists were really talking about how important it is and how much it really does make a difference when our senators and representatives hear from us. And not just by signing a petition, but actually writing a letter, calling the offices. It's really important. And right now, there are so many bills, that are being proposed right now in the House of Representatives. There's one that's going to terminate the Environmental Protection Agency. There's one for vouchers of public education, which will terminate the Department of Education and change public education as we know it. Allowing vouchers to be able to be used so that kids can go to parochial schools instead, and that will take money from public education and, of course, really affect the equality of education in this country, which already still is challenged. I mean, if you go to a poorer neighborhood, the schools usually are not as good as if you go to a more affluent neighborhood, even in the public schools. And, you know, that's something that we're still dealing with. There's a bill proposed that will reduce the protecting wildlife. There's the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. There's trying to defund Planned Parenthood. The list just goes on and on. It's amazing. And we're all being distracted, of course, with what's going on with the administration in Russia and all those connections. And so, that's one of the reasons that I really invited Michelle Pascal on to talk to us about daily meditation practices for daily stress. Because with all this stuff going on, it is really hard to keep your equilibrium and to keep centered. And yet we all need to really keep doing that so that we can keep sharing the love and keep putting out positive energy amongst all this negative stuff that's going on around us. And it doesn't mean we don't get active and we don't participate, because we all need to. We need to stand up. We need to become activists. We need to participate in this process. But at the same time, we have to focus on our heart space, on our love, and really be a shining light amongst all this negativity. So that's just something we really all really have to do. So I would like to share with you my recipe this week, and then I will be inviting my guest on. I made a banana pear tort that was just delicious. It's gluten-free and vegan. And as you notice, these days, a lot of the recipes I'm making, most of them I'd say are vegan, and gluten-free is just easy to do to make it edible for everyone. But if you want to use regular flour instead of gluten-free flour, of course you can do that. So I started with a tablespoon of ground flaxseed that I mixed with 1 tablespoon of apple cider vinegar and 1 tablespoon of water. And this is my go-to egg substitute. So just hold that on a back burner for any time you want to try to change a recipe from using an egg to being vegan. You can mix this ground flaxseed with 1 tablespoon of apple cider vinegar and water, and that really helps. 4 medium ripe bananas, 1/2 cup of maple syrup, 1/4 cup of organic oil. I used organic canola oil because I'm cooking for someone who has allergies, and that's the best oil for her. If you're using organic, it's not genetically modified. Canola is one of those ingredients that is mostly genetically modified, so you need to spend the extra and get it organic if you're going to use that. You can also use safflower oil or coconut oil. 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 2 teaspoons of baking soda, 1 teaspoon of baking powder, 1 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/2 teaspoon of sea salt, 1.5 cups of gluten-free, dairy-free flour. I like Pamela's bread mix. They also have a pancake mix, but that has dairy in it, so I use the bread mix. 1/2 cup of gluten-free oats that you grind up and measure it after grinding, so 1/2 cup of the ground gluten-free oats. 3 ripe pears that I use for the top, and 2 tablespoons brown sugar that I just sprinkle on top to caramelize the pears. So I'm going to start by preheating the oven to 350 degrees and spray a tart pan with a removable bottom with some canola oil or any kind of pan spray that you have. In a small bowl, as I said before, you're going to dissolve the flaxseed with the water and apple cider vinegar and let that stand for 5 minutes. Meanwhile, in a larger mixing bowl, mash the bananas up, mix in the maple syrup, the oil, and the vanilla. And then you can add the flaxseed into that bowl with the wet ingredients. And in another bowl, you can combine the dry ingredients, the gluten-free flour, the gluten-free oats, the baking soda, the baking powder, the cinnamon, and the salt. And then mix that up. Then add those dry ingredients to the wet ingredients bowl and just mix that all up. Then you pour that batter into the tart pan. And I use a tart pan that has a fluted edge, so when I remove it, it's really pretty. And then I peeled the sliced pears. And I should say that this recipe was actually inspired by my getting very ripe pears that were in the refrigerator that needed to be used up. So I had very ripe pears, and I peeled them, and I sliced them up. And then I arranged them in concentric circles on top of the tart pan. And I sprinkled that with some brown sugar. And I know, you know, when the brown sugar melts, it caramelizes the top of the pears. And I baked it for about 40 minutes or until a toothpick or a knife comes out clean. And it depends. The baking time is dependent on your oven. It's also dependent on the thickness of or the size of the tart pan. So it depends on the thickness of the batter. So you really just have to kind of watch it and test it. Halfway through, I always spin my pan around because the back of my oven is a little hotter than the front of my oven just to help the baking happen evenly. And that's it. It was so good. So I hope you all make it, and of course, I'd love feedback, so let me know how you like it. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Michel Pascal. He is the author of Meditation for Daily Stress, 10 Practices for Immediate Well-Being. And Michel is a French writer, meditation teacher, singer, photographer, and filmmaker, and he has made many spiritual documentaries over the years. He studied in Nepal in one of the largest monasteries in the Himalayas, and his teacher, a descendant of Marpa Rinpoche, was his meditation teacher for many years. Michel's written 19 books in French about spirituality. I'm not sure if this is his first one in English, but I'll let him tell us more about the work that he's doing and his new meditation practice that is being practiced at Google, Harvard, Dharma Yoga Center of New York and Los Angeles, and many other places as well. Michel, are you with me?
I am so happy to be with you.
Thank you. Well, I'm so happy to have you, really. Normally, most of my guests are working within the food arena, and, you know, I'm sure many of my listeners are wondering why, you know, I am having on a meditation teacher as opposed to a food activist. But, you know, I think your book is just so timely, you know, with everything going on in our government right now, even for people that are on a spiritual path, it is challenging to stay centered. And yes. I think your work is just perfect.
Thank you so much, Bhavani. And first, congratulations for your show, for your newsletter. I was written your newsletter this morning. Uh-huh. And I say congratulations for what you do. We need to take care of the body with the food, but also we need to take care of the mind, because we can eat the best vegan organic food. If we are stressed, we know in neuroscience that we destroy the property of the quality of the food that we eat. You know, one of my best friends is Dr. Amshit Setan. He's one of the Tibetan doctors of his holiness Dalai Lama. And Amshi Tsetan was also the doctor of the highest Tibetan master, like Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, Dzogchen Rinpoche. And Amshi Tsetan, many times he teach for American doctors. And he says something very interesting. He say, in Los Angeles, for example, you eat vegan, organic, the quality of the food is exceptional. In Nepal, we are one of the poorest countries of the world. We eat chicken in the street. But in Nepal, we have no cancer. And in Los Angeles, you have a lot of cancer. Why?
Right.
Why? And because how we eat is extremely important. The quality of the food is so important. But like he explained, according Tibetan medicine and according neuroscience, when we are stressed with a neurotransmitter, if we eat a carrot, for example, a beautiful organic carrot, when we are stressed, we destroy, according neuroscience, around 70% of the carotene. So, I mean, to take care of the body, of the food, it's a priority. But to take care of the mind in the stress, in the daily stress, it is the most important.
I agree with you.
It is,
you know,
for
and people
stress,
don't people don't value that
stress.
Enough here. And, you know, the quality of our food is important, but how you eat it, where you eat it, and the state of mind you are in is so valuable as well.
Yes, and also, as we know, I mean, we can eat the best food of the world, but if we are stressed, we destroy the quality of the food in our body. So it's the same thing. I mean, if we practice any relaxation in a beautiful place, in a mindful place, in a monastery, in a yoga room, in a landscape, it's really beautiful, and we need that. But my question was, when we go back in our daily stress, if we are stressed again, according to neuroscience, they say that we lose 93% of the benefit of the practice of relaxation when we go back. Because stress, it's a neurochemical addiction. It's an addiction. Every emotion is an addiction. So it is the reason why when I live in my monastery, I say it's beautiful, but for me the most important, it's to be happy, to be calm in my daily stress. So how can I be more calm in my daily stress every day? It was the question of my book.
Absolutely. Yeah, my spiritual teacher used to say, if you can find God in New York, you can find God anywhere. Because, you know,
you know,
and it's true.
It's so true what you
say. You know, it's very easy to stay spiritual when you're, you know, on the top of a mountaintop and you have nothing in the world that is stressing you out. But the minute you come down into your daily life with business and cars and traffic and people cutting you off and people being rude and, you know, all that stuff, you know,
it's
different.
Because we don't live in a monastery. We don't live in a yoga room. We don't live in a landscape. We live in big cities, exactly as you say, Bhavani, like New York, like LA, like Chicago, like Paris, London, anywhere. And it's funny because one of the first time when I have teach for the managers at Google in New York City, I remember one of the managers, she was in a very difficult stress situation. And she was so surprised because I say, come with me in Times Square to meditate. She said, Michel, you are crazy. Times Square is so stressed. But yes, if we are able to touch our soul, to discover our spiritual dimension, to discover our inside world in the storm of Times Square, and I organize mini retreats in Times Square, and I will do that again in May in New York City, when we are calm in the storm of the stress, we can be calm at the workplace, in the traffic, in the trains. Because we can't refuse our world. We can't say, oh, I want to escape. You know, it's like the Monday morning. Monday morning in America, this is the highest rate of suicide. after the weekend.
Really?
So, because when we are up and down, calm and stress, it's extremely difficult for the brain, because we feed the separation between the moment I can be calm and I must be stressed. So in reality, when I came from my monastery in America, I discovered that in America, we have a totally wrong perception of meditation. It's a cliché. We think that we need to meditate in a landscape. No, we need to be calm anytime, anywhere.
And
built a separation between the moment I must be calm and the moment I go back to my job and I am stressed. More we build this separation, more we are addicted to this separation, to this wrong perception of meditation. And to give a picture, it's like, you know, peace, it's like oxygen. It's anytime, anywhere. But if you say, oh, I don't want to breathe when I am in my job. I can breathe only when I go in a yoga place, in a comfortable landscape. No, we can breathe and we need oxygen anytime, anywhere. It is
right.
The
reason
why
the breath is a tool.
For the stress change all.
Right. The breath is the tool to help us stay calm.
And
I think people forget that, you know, or don't know that. And so can you tell us what inspired you to create these short meditation exercises that you have in your book?
Yes. As you say, every day, there is no discussion. We must be more calm. We know that. Any people, we know that. We can be young, old, rich, poor. I teach for celebrity. I teach for prisoners in jail. We know that there is no life without peace. Saint Thérèse of Lisieux, she said that many times. There is no life if we are not calm. There is no hope. There is no good health. More we are stressed, more we destroy our immune system. So the question is how to be more calm in the daily stress. So meditation for daily stress, it's a sort of a revolution in meditation because we break the cliché to meditate in a landscape and we practice, we train our mind to be more present, to be more calm in the train, in the traffic, in the subway, in the big cities like New York, in the street, and especially at the workplace when we receive every day the stress from the coworkers, from the manager. So how can I be more calm in the storm? So for that, I have adapted the pure acknowledge that I have the chance to live when I was in a monastery, also a Buddhist and Christian monastery, because it's a thing to talk about spirituality, meditation. It's another thing when we have a monastic life. It's very different. So meditation in Tibetan means to train our mind. So how can I train my mind when I am, for example, in the train in New York City? So one of the visualizations that we practice, it's to be sitting down like a mountain. Every day we need stability because the mind is running all time. It's one of the most important problems in America. The mind is running all time. How can I stop my mind running all time in the stress? I give this example, so we practice, we are sitting down like a mountain, and we breathe like a mountain. We can breathe mentally the stability of the mountain. I can make an example with you how it works. So I snap three times. And just we close our eyes. And we are in the train in New York. A lot of noises around us. But we are sitting down like a mountain. We don't move. We do nothing. If we have some thought in our mind, we do nothing. Thoughts are like clouds in the sky. They move. And when we are sitting down, like a mountain, we can breathe the stability of the mountain. We can visualize a mountain. We see the stability of the mountain. We breathe in the stability. We keep the stability and we exhale mentally the stability in all our body.
Mm.
And we open our eyes. In a few seconds, we can train our mind to become a mountain.
Wow. And so this can be done for anybody, right? You don't have to be an experienced meditator. You don't need to light a candle or burn an incense. You can really do it anywhere.
Exactly. Of course, I love to practice with a candle. I love to be in my monastery. We love that. We need that.
Right.
But we don't live in a monastery, and we live in a stressful life. So we need nothing. Just we need to be sitting down, for example, like a mountain. We know, there is a survey if we want to see when we meditate if our meditation works. The survey is simple. If our brain is running all time, it proves that our practice, it's not enough adapted to our life. I remember 3 years ago, the first time I teach in New York, it was for yoga teacher. I met a yoga teacher in a big company in New York, and she said, Michelle, I teach yoga, but I am so stressed. I have a lot of money problem with yoga. There is a big competition in New York City. So where is my yoga? Where is my meditation? Where is my prayer if in my daily life I am stressed? So the most important is to train our mind in the daily life, inside the stress, not outside, but inside.
Mm-hmm. I think for many people, one of the most stressful things is driving in New York. Is this a practice you can do even while driving, or would you think that's dangerous to like?
It's a good question, Bhavani, because I teach for Uber drivers in Los Angeles. What we do, we go on the freeway at the rush hour. And I don't drive. I am sit down, close the Uber drivers. And we use some special practice and visualization to be more calm when we drive, to rediscover that our car can be like a refuge. We can build, my car become my church, my shrine, my chapel. I can be more calm. And when I touch my car with my hands, when I feel my feet with the pedal of the car and my hands on the wheel of the car, we practice to be more calm when we drive. And we drive softly, calm, and very concentrated to any cars around us. Just before to be with you this morning, I teach for one of the senators of New York. She was in a car, in a big traffic, and every day we train the brain with this person to be more calm when she drives. So, of course, meditation, it's also when we drive. It's when we are active. And more we are calm, more we are active.
Very interesting, yeah, because, I think when people sometimes get behind the wheel, they just become different people, and they become aggressive and, you know, you, in New York, I know this for myself even, in New York City, if you want to get somewhere, you really have to be assertive. Like if you just stay behind the slowest car, you're never going to make time. And as an Uber driver, I think their passengers would get upset if they stayed too calm and didn't weave in and out of the traffic to get somewhere, you know, because the traffic is so intense.
But more the traffic is intense, better it is to practice.
Right.
More at the workplace our coworkers are so stressed, better it is to practice. More we are in the adversity, better it is to practice in meditation for daily stress. Of course, if you are educated with a wrong perception of meditation, with the cliché to be sit down like a lotus and to be like that, it's a cliché. We don't do that in a monastery. So if you are educated with the cliché, it's difficult to meditate. I mean, me when I teach for big manager in big company in New York, or all the people who listen to you, Bhavani, today, and we work a lot in New York, 10 hours, 15 hours per day, and after the brain is running all time, all the night, how can you say to someone, oh, my friend, you have worked 15 hours, now you must be concentrated to meditate. No, we see, I mean, in our time, it's not adapted. It doesn't work. It is the same thing I teach many times in New York for Staying Out. Staying Out in Brooklyn, it's an amazing foundation for prisoners, for women in shelters, from violence and all. And when I come to teach for prisoners who have PTSD or we have a lot of suffering, how can we say to a prisoner, oh, my friend, take a deep breath and be sit down? We see it's not possible. It's not possible. In Los Angeles, I can give you an example, amazing example. I teach meditation for daily stress for Amity Foundation. Amity Foundation in California, it's probably the biggest foundation for prisoners, for parolees. In California, 80% of parolees, they go back in jail.
Right.
But with MET Foundation, with Meditation for Daily Stress, the same percentage, Bhavani, 80% of parolees, they never go back in jail. They find a job. They rebuild a life. And many of my students, they want to become meditation teacher to reduce violence for high-risk communities. So, yes, we can. Yes, everyone, we can change our mind. If, of course, if we practice the cliché of meditation, we don't change our mind because we are stressed again in the daily stress.
Right.
But if we change the mind, we change.
Michelle, let's take a couple-minute break. And when we come back, I'd like to actually talk a little bit about how the meditation actually affects the brain and the stress. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Michelle Pascal, meditation teacher, and we will be right back.
Do you want to know the latest news or upcoming events? Follow us at Twitter at @PRN_radio or click the Twitter icon on our homepage. You can also friend us on Facebook. Just search Progressive Radio Network. Always new and up to date. The Progressive Radio Network, your home for thoughtful and informative information.
This is Mike Fader. Let me tell you about PRN.FM. It's a whole new world of broadcasting. PRN has absolutely no question the best political and economic shows on the radio. Plus, PRN tops every other station in its health and wellness program. Cooking, music, book reviews, sex advice, you name it, we have it. I'm going to tell you this one time. You need to listen to our programming, okay? All right? Don't make me come down here.
It's the VRONX. You know what's next.
It's a bowl of soul. Tune in and get your dose of classic soul and independent R&B music from the United States and abroad on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. A Bowl of Soul is a music experience you won't forget or regret. Check out A Bowl of Soul on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm talking with Michel Pascal about his new book, Meditation for Daily Stress. Michel, you with me?
Yes.
Great. So for those that really want to start this meditation, what do you suggest as the first start? I know in your book you talk about visualization. Is it, you know, do you think they should start with visualizing or with the breath or both of them together? Can you give people a little tip?
Yes. First, there is a big difference between ordinary meditation, as we find anywhere in America, and an authentic way of meditation from the monastic life. What is the difference? In ordinary meditation, we talk about tips, about technique. But in a real spiritual life, according Buddhism, for example, and it was my school, with my Rinpoche, Chepa Dorje Rinpoche, and Chatral Rinpoche, and all the lineage, what they say? They say that visualization, practice, technique, it's 10% of a meditation. But 90%, it's the power. Powa in Tibetan means transfusion of consciousness. We give an energy. So when we guide someone in meditation, we give an energy to the person. Me, I am singer. I come from jazz music and from music in churches. So I use my voice as a teacher to give a pure energy, to give the power, the transfusion of conscience when I guide someone. So it is the main difference between a technique and a transmission of energy. So this is the first point. The second point, it's, you know, the first time I arrive in my monastery and I say, how can I start? The answer was very simple. Michel, sitting down, but like a mountain. Just to be sitting down, to close our eyes a few seconds, or to keep our eyes open, but just to be sitting down like a mountain, to feel the weight of the spirituality, to feel the calm, to be sitting down. But for that, we need to be guided. It's very difficult to practice at the beginning by ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So how do you suggest people get started then if they don't have a guide?
I mean, a book can be a guide, but also a video, also an audio MP3. For example, I have a project with MTA in New York to diffuse some of my practice in the speaker, through the speakers, in some stations of New York. Or I have 15 teachers certified in America, and they teach every day this way of meditation. Because we know, Bhavani, when someone is so stressed, we can't say to the person, do this, do that. It's too much difficult. We can't be concentrated, and we are too much tired to ask more concentration. So in meditation for daily stress, I record a lot of videos and audio every day. All is free on my TV online, michelpascal.tv. And we do the same thing when I was in my monastery. When my Rinpoche guides me, immediately I felt better. And there is no discussion, there is no tips, there is no do this, do that. No. Just when I listen his voice, immediately I was more calm. Meditation, we forget that in America. It's a transmission of energy. It's a power, as we say in Buddhism.
Mm-hmm. Given the epidemic of stress in today's world, do you really believe that meditation can help mitigate the stress that everyone's leaving and change the burnout that so many people are feeling?
Oh, your question is very, very interesting. Because we know that in neuroscience since 20 years, we know that every minute we are stressed, every minute we destroy our immune system. Every minute we are stressed, we have more acidity in the stomach, for example. We destroy our neurone in the brain. We destroy our blood pressure. I mean, there is no hope. To be stressed, there is no hope. Many times I say like a joke, if we are stressed, we are more happy and more healthy, we must be more stressed. But it's not true. More we are stressed, more we destroy our body and our mind. For example, in neuroscience, they think that more we are stressed, more we can have Alzheimer and Parkinson so soon. So, of course, we need to meditate. We need to be more calm. Because every day when we are more calm, we upgrade our immune system. Because in the brain, the neurotransmitters work better. So the oxygen travels better. All the neurochemical message from the brain go easier and faster in every cells of our body. So me, I teach for people who have cancer, for example. We know that we can really help someone to reduce a tumor by visualization. It's not a philosophic opinion, it's a reality that we see on scanner. Of course, we need medicine, we need chemotherapy, we need doctor, but it's complementary. Me, I work many times with psychiatric doctor, because when we have a PTSD, a psychiatric doctor can give you a pills or can help you. But a pills can't change your emotion. A pill can stabilize a difficult imbalance in the brain. But no pills in the world can re-educate our happiness or stability. So
People always talk about, people who study food, they hear about the acidity in the body and that the acidity in the body causes cancer and causes our immune system to not be strong. And so people try to eat more alkaline foods. However, they don't think that stress is causing acidity in the body. It's kind of a disconnect. I think people are starting to think about food affecting their bodies, but not so much the power of the mind. And so that, it's a whole new way of thinking, I think. And I think it's great because we can control it. It's in our power. Because a lot of people, people who can't afford the finest organic food, as we know in this country, it's more expensive. And so, but they can do so much with the mind, and this is free.
Bhavani, congratulations for what you say. Because what you say, it's exactly that we know in neuroscience with the last discoveries in the brain. And it's exactly what say all the Tibetan doctors. And Tibetan medicine come from Chinese and Ayurvedic medicine since many, many centuries. What you say, it's exactly the teaching in Tibetan medicine. So it is a reason why we can eat vegan and organic every day. If we are stressed, we create a lot of acidity. And the question, of course, the quality of the food is so important, but the quality of the emotion, the quality of the mind is more important. You can eat all the best food of the world if you are stressed. It's like my relaxation. Where is my mantra? Where is my food? If I am stressed, if my brain is running all time. And for me, I repeat again, the survey, it's if my brain is running all time, my practice, my daily life, it's not enough adapted. And like you say, it's a wonderful time because everyone we know, we can't keep going on to be stressed. And we must be more calm in the traffic when you explain in New York, in the traffic. How my traffic can become my spiritual teacher. how my car can become my yoga room, the place I love every day to be more calm? How can I rediscover my travel when I go to my job in my car, if we develop the example of the traffic? So me, I love traffic. I love stress because it's a good way to practice. If we live in a world too much calm, we don't practice. We are lazy. But when we live in a crazy life, as we live, you and me and everyone, it's a wonderful opportunity to change our perception of the life. And immediately we have result in the body. When you talk about acidity, you must know that when we practice in the daily stress, immediately we reduce acidity in the stomach. Not in 6 months, immediately.
Mm. Lovely. Can you have any tips for how people can breathe and meditate through the political reality that we're dealing with right now in our country?
I mean, I'm struggling
question.
With
but
it. Michelle, I'm really struggling.
Really, your questions are so sexy. I mean, first, there is a fact. We can be Republican, we can be Democrat, we can be old, we can be young, rich, a prisoner, or homeless. Everyone, we make the experience that when we reject someone, when we have bad emotions, I mean, when we complain, when we critique all the time, when we reject someone, we don't feel good. It's not a question of political opinion. It's an evidence that a child or an old people can feel immediately. We reject someone. We have anger to some communities or to someone. Immediately, we don't feel good. No one can feel good when we complain, when we critique, or when we are violent. So on this way, there is no hope. Year after year, we are more and more stressed, we have more and more anger, and we become sick year after year. So to live is to choose. So it's very clear. So what can we do in this world, political as we say? What can we do in our world? Because it's not only in America. Me, I come from France. I am U.S. citizen, but I am immigrant from France. In my country, it is the same thing that in America, and it's the same thing around the world. So what can we do? What is the answer to your advice? I think really in this world, before all, we need one thing, to be more calm in our daily life. When the mind is more calm, we don't complain. When the mind is more calm, we are more happy. When the mind is more calm, we rediscover every minute of our life. I am calm. I am with you, Bhavani. I really appreciate to talk with you. I enjoy this precious minute that we have. It's wonderful to be with you and all the people who listen to your show. So the answer of your question, we need to be more calm, not outside of the stress, but inside the stress, in New York City, in the traffic, at the workplace, in a Starbucks, in a supermarket, everywhere we need to train our mind. And I am very happy because I am very optimist. I see every day many people, prisoners, president of big company in America, students in Harvard University, children in school, everyone, we feel we can't keep going on to be stressed. Because we feel we don't feel good. The health doesn't work. We don't feel good. So everyone, we realize that in our world now, and especially with political tensions, we need to be more calm. We need to be more kind. More we are calm, more we have energy. It's true. More you are stressed, more you lose your energy. More we are calm, more the mind is more clear to find any solutions to our problem. when I teach for Google one day, I say, more you will be calm, more you will be creative, productive, and more you will make money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because you want to be calm, but you still want to be active. You know, that's something that I'm always riding that, you know, that tightrope with people, because I feel like it's important for people to write letters and to march with the protests and to, you know, to be out there. But you can do it with the calm of the meditation that you're teaching. You know,
exactly.
You don't have to do it angry. You can do it with love and peace and enjoy the people you're with while you're protesting and marching and, you know, trying to focus on, you know, building the love with those that are, you know, in like mind. It's building the love with those that are not in like mind that is the big challenge.
It's absolutely true. I mean, you, me, everyone who listen your talk show, we know we don't feel good when we are stressed, when we complain, when we reject. Okay, we have understood that. So how can be more calm in our daily stress? This is exactly the book and all the video and the conferences. I forget to say to you, but in New York City, May 14, the Sunday of Mother's Day, we organize a sort of special day in New York City, a meditation daily stress day. So I will guide and sing in Times Square, in Central Park, in Penn Station, in Grand Central, in the subway, in many, many places in New York City.
So, really?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, I'll share that with everyone in my newsletter. You know, I share everybody a link to this show so that they can listen down the road, and I'll share that with you. And I will post the May 14th event so that everyone can see that. And then just share, we're almost out of time, so just share really quickly again your website so that people can find you online and order your book.
MichelPascal.tv. MichelPascal.tv, and also my Twitter, Michel Meditates.
Wonderful. And everyone, I'll have that link on my website as well, so you can find it there. Michelle, thank you so much. And everybody listening, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.